Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to GIG. I'm your host, Mike Redman. JDM Music and Sound is a well-respected company located in the heart of L.A. Primarily, they create music for trailers. You've heard their work on Monkey Man, Wonka, Secret Invasion, The Equalizer, The Brother's Son, Good Mother, Fast and Furious, as well as a long list of other high-profile film properties. Forging the path for JDM Music and Sound is composer and founder Joel Dean. I've had the pleasure of watching his career for several years as it's blossomed into one of the leading music houses in LA. Joel's a down-to-earth guy, family man, an extraordinary composer, and he's also a businessman. I'm really delighted to have him on GIG with Mike Redman today. Every time I talk to Joel, I walk away feeling smarter somehow. So as always, let's get to it. Well, hi, Joel. How you doing?
I'm great. It's nice to see you again.
Oh, it's really nice. It's been a long, long time.
Been a few years.
Gosh, I mean, it's really changed a lot for you. I mean, the list of credentials for JDM Music and Sound is astonishing. Ant-Man, Equalizer 2, Brothers of Sons, Scream. It looks like things are going pretty good for you.
It's been going very well, yes. We're super happy, and it's been a lot of fun.
You know, I'll get into some questions here. I'm sure that other people have them, but your company creates film trailers, TV and advertising. You also do sound design. If I put you on the spot, which one's your favorite?
Oh, definitely the music. Yeah. And I would say doing custom music. That's kind of where we got started, and that's more of my background in advertising. Mm-hmm. Music as a staff composer, was everything was custom. Every single day a new brief coming in and a different creative direction. So I kind of brought that into the trailer world, and that's really our one of our main things, is taking a song that somebody wants, you know, music supervisors kind of chosen one or two songs that they want to work into a trailer, and then we'll come in and just think of a creative way to make it trailer friendly. It's make it sound like a remix, or if it's adding more of an orchestral hybrid approach to it, or if it's taking it and chopping it up, or if it's taking it and half the trailer, you're just teasing it and you know, I have no idea what song is going to play. And then when it reveals, it kind of hits you over the head. So there's a lot of different approaches. And the partners that we work with, the music supervisors that we work with at the trailer houses, they're just awesome. They come up with really creative ideas. And the other great thing about trailers is there's not really many limitations on budget. So sometimes you're mashing up classic songs with a Biggie vocal, and you know, on our end, we don't have to worry about the clearance. So we just get to be creative.
Isn't that cool?
What
a plus. I mean, to be writing music without too many budget considerations. Yeah, they're taking this $20 million budget, right? They're taking their $20 million marketing budget, and so you actually get a piece of that. Talking about trailers, would you walk me through, our audience through, how this works? If you get a creative brief or you get a phone call, and then what happens between there and the screen when you release it?
So we generally get a email from one of our clients saying, hey, this is a project that we're working on. This is a song that we have in mind. Sometimes it's as open as, we love what you guys do. Just do your thing with it. Just give us some cool options. And then other times it's detailed as far as structure. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what we're thinking for the intro, this is what we're thinking for the middle section, and then we can kind of get on a Zoom with the editors and kind of talk through what structurally they're thinking. Mm-hmm. Rarely they'll have it roughly mapped out. Sometimes they might take the original song and just roughly chop mm-hmm. it around the piece. But generally it's kind of in between those two. It's kind of like, you know, we want you guys to do your thing and surprise us, but at the same time, you know, we needed to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And we're just kind of trying to achieve somewhere in the middle, and always try to surprise them. Our clients always love when we just give them something fresh and something they didn't think of.
How long does that process take?
The editors giving them Yeah, and with editors too, you want to give them always give them more, you know, give them some cool little section that they didn't think of, like something that can do some rhythmic, fun, choppy thing too. Maybe they'll take that and use that for the intro. Just trying to give them basically like a toolkit, a layout of the structure, but also some other little pieces of ear candy, so to speak, that they can kind of play with and cut some interesting visuals with.
Are they how long does this process typically take?
Anywhere from we need it tomorrow morning to we have a week. The longest I've ever, you know, sometimes you get early in a project and they'll say, you know, we got like 2, 3 weeks on this, so we have plenty of time to kick around things. But generally the budget, or sorry, the timelines are pretty tight. Sometimes we get stuff Friday at 4 o'clock and they need something Monday morning. One of the first trailers I worked on was this trailer, Rampage, the movie with The Rock back in, like, I think like 2017. And it was a 4 p.m. call. They needed it by like 9 in the morning. So I was just, you know, cranking away all night. That was when I was mostly doing all the composing on my own. So I was just cranking away late night and just delivered it in one version. And the next thing I know, it went to air, got the quote, went to air, and that was that. So it's definitely varies. Sometimes there's a lot of revisions and it's kind of an ongoing process and you're massaging the picture. And then sometimes you just deliver a V1 and next thing you know, it's gone to air.
Are
So
you delivering this in what format? I mean, I'm obviously giving them stems
yeah, so we deliver just a, you know, high-res file with the song, and then we try to deliver another high-res file with without vocals, if possible, and then a lot of, and then sometimes with no song, with just our work. So kind of two or three high-res deliveries, and then we always deliver with the stems too, because they usually want to jump in and start editing right
Sure.
away.
Yeah, I bet.
And a lot of times they don't use the high-res. The high-res is more for the presentation and stuff like that. Usually the editors want to get in the nitty-gritty of the stems and start, you know, chopping things up.
You make it sound easy. I am very familiar with how difficult all the
Yeah.
but each step of what you just said, I understand exactly what that entails. So let's go back a little bit. You
Sure.
were working several years ago with Butter Music, and you moved to LA and
Yes.
opened their office as the creative director slash composer. And then a few years later, you decided to do it your own startup with JDM Music and Sound. So what prompted that decision?
I just had been writing ads for a really long time at that point, 8 years or so, and it just felt as a composer I wanted to really kind of focus in and hone in on something. Loved writing ads, but one of the challenges is one day you're writing a jingle, one day you're writing an orchestral piece, one day you're writing, so you kind of like have to wear many hats, and I feel like you're not really able to specialize in one thing
Sure.
so much. So once I discovered trailers, because somebody in my apartment building owned a company called Chroma, and they had a trailer music, they're still around as well, have a trailer music company, and I was just like, oh, cool, what is this? And I just kind of, you know, saw some of the work they were doing. I'm like, wow, this is like really cool. Like, I just love the intensity of the production, and that it was like really high level production with orchestral, and it was just kind of putting a lot of things together that I really enjoyed as a composer. So I kind of just started testing the water a little bit with that, and started landing a few big trailer, like a Wonder Woman trailer and a few other things. So I kind of took a leap of faith. My daughter was about 8 months old at the time, and it was a little bit risky, but I kind of just felt like this is what I want to do, and everything's pulling me in this
Sure.
direction. So I left Butter, and I started just going at first, just kind of
Sure.
freelancing, doing trailers, and then I started then going under my own company and going directly to music supervisors, and mostly starting out doing customs. And around that time, there wasn't a lot of companies as much doing customs. It was a little more of a new thing, and my ad background really lent itself well to it. I just prefer to have a deadline. I prefer to have like a structured idea of what needs to be done. I just work better like that. Sometimes a blank canvas, takes me a little bit longer to get somewhere with. So the custom work was just very exciting to me, and it was always cool. It was like, oh, this Kendrick Lamar song, and we want to make it work for whatever, this Kong trailer, and there was just like a lot of like cool ideas, and I was like, wow, this is just super fun and creative, and but less with like rules.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was really more of an open thing. You just kind of come up with cool things, and just the end of the day, just make something that's looks epic and is really cool visually, and gives the editors a lot of things to work with. So it was super fun, and that's how it led me to kind of build up the JDM brand. And now it's been about 6 or so, 7 years almost. And now we have a full team of composers and sound designers, and just great clients, and a steady flow of projects.
Okay, you have a bigger organization now, JDM Music and Sound. What would you say that for you personally, the big advantage is of that over being a freelance composer? Besides just making, bringing in more projects and making more money.
A little less stress that it's always on you to compose everything. As a composer, as I was getting, I'm 41 now, and just I have kids.
Oh,
It's
God, you look 20, so go ahead.
well, thank you. But it's a little bit tough to it's tough to be a composer. It's not an easy road, to be honest. And I had been doing it since I was in my early 20s. So just And being a composer, I mean, you're always in the studio. It's just almost every waking hour is you're trying to get work done. And sometimes, and I started to feel a little bit as I got older, sometimes you go on these lulls. And for me to be able to take a step back and have other composers fill the void or collaborate with other composers, that's really how I started bringing in other outside composers at first, was just more like as collaborations. And then as I was collaborating more, I was like, hey, just why don't you, I'm doing an album, why don't you send in a track on your own? And then that kind of just organically grew. And then and now it feels good to be able to take a step back and just focus on the creative, and just have, when you're outside of a project, it's easier for you to know what needs to get done. Whereas when you're the one composing it all the time, you get stuck inside of, oh, this back end sounds great to me. I mean, I don't know what they're talking about. But if you're a step back and you're always kind of hearing with fresh ears, I think that gives you more perspective to say, no, this is what, we really need to take it in this direction. And
I definitely that yeah,
so
I
that.
definitely get the part about stepping back. I went through a similar piece where I got pretty popular as being a composer, and so the work was coming a lot quicker. Instead of maybe one job a week, I was getting four or five, and then I had a show to do, and then I had a this, and I was like, we never, as composers, because we're paranoid, we never say, no. So
No,
so I
absolutely.
would I that's how what happened with me. I got collaborators, then I found people that were just really good at this genre that I frankly wasn't that great. And
That too,
yeah,
yeah.
so that's cool. So it was you said you have employees or associates, I should maybe say. If you don't mind me asking, when you said you took a leap of faith, did you that cost money to do a startup? Did you have a financial partner, or did you just kind of bite the bullet and go?
No, I didn't. And there was, to be honest, it was very little overhead. I was already renting a studio, and I already had all the gear and equipment, and all the software instruments, and my whole rig. So it wasn't so much of a financial And it was more of a financial question mark of, you know, where's the next money going to come from? Especially after I'd been earning a salary and a kind of guaranteed situation. That was a little more of a question mark, but it didn't feel like questionable. There was nothing inside saying this is the wrong thing. It's just all that was the only kind of music I wanted to focus on at the time. And there was just, everything was just pulling me in that direction. So it wasn't it wasn't really on the fence about it. That's kind of dove in and went for it.
So, I did the same thing. I did. Our paths were very similar. I kind of just bit the bullet and went after it. And I'd never really marketed myself. And I came to find that, you know, if you're pretty doggone good at what you do, there was work. So looking back a few years, what was the toughest part of getting your company started? What was it?
I think kind of gaining the trust of the clients out there. There were a couple that worked with us like straight off the bat, and like forever grateful because they were just kept us working, work coming in and really cool projects. And they happened to be two of the top trailer houses. Nice. So that was obviously very helpful. But it takes time sometimes for other people to gain that trust. They might have their partners that they're working with creatively, their music vendors that they like to work with. And sometimes for you to break through, it takes a minute, especially with custom. I mean, it's these are high budget, can be stressful for the clients because they have to deliver something and they're competing as other trailer companies. Mm. So if they're trusting you to deliver something on Monday and you give them something they can't use, I mean, they're screwed. Mm. So then what are they going to do? They got to scramble and try to figure something out the last minute and then they'll never call you again. Yeah. So it is, you have to step up and deliver. So, so kind of getting into the circles of other partners, was probably the hardest thing.
Okay.
Not so much hard. It's just persistence. Yeah. Persistence.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you have to do some favors and sometimes they might give you the 5 o'clock on Friday call. We have no one else that can do this. Yeah. You've been trying to work with us, so here's your chance.
I got one of those from Disney. Yeah. Same thing.
Yep. Yeah. And then you have to step up and kill it. And if you do, then like, okay, well, we got this other thing. I want you to throw something, for that one. And then you build that trust and then you just go from there.
Become a go-to.
Yeah. You become a go-to for
That's
sure.
That's awesome, man. That is so cool. I'm so happy for you and proud of I don't have any reason to be proud, but I think it's just really, it's cool. To know you then and now it's really a neat jump.
I appreciate that. We go back from I think the first job I had at the lodge, which was, still trying to figure things out, in my early 20s. And, we've been kind of, bouncing back and forth for, over a decade now.
It's kind of wild. So, actually, I had a quick question about creative for trailers. You said you do you take a lot of songs and work them into trailers. I know there's not all typical for anything, but do you often re-record and maybe keep the vocals or those kinds of things?
The trend and recently is mostly using the acapella and then you're building a whole new track. Because then you're not limited by the original instrumental. Because a lot of times the original instrumentals the songs are not meant to do what trailers do, right? They just kind of hang and they have a groove and they stay there, whereas trailers are up and down. So a lot of times you're just working with the acapella. Mm-hmm. And then in the music that you make, a lot of times you're hinting at something from there might be a main riff in the song and you're hinting at that with the music and you're teasing it at first. And then by the time the back end comes in, the orchestra's maybe playing off of that riff or something like that. So that is, So I would say mostly like most of the job now are just kind of using the acapella from the original songs.
So do you spend, it sounds like you must spend a fair amount of time in the studio.
Yeah.
Do you have do you have your own studios, or are you going to stages? How are you, what are you doing for recording?
No, I mean, I have my own studio office at home, and then all the composers I work with are mostly working remotely, so they're sending me stuff to check out. And then a lot of times they're collaborating with each other, or if you need a string player, I have a go-to that she lives in the UK. She's an amazing string player. She'll send something over to her. She records in her studio, sends it back. Everything's
I
remote
love it.
now.
I love it.
It's efficient, but it is. I do miss the in-person work. It's not as much of a thing anymore, and everyone's in totally different places of the world. So, but it's I guess it's fun like that too. I think some composers work better that way, to be in their own space, and then when they're ready to show you something, then they show it, rather than, if you're in person, it's a different. Some people are great that way, some people aren't. So
I just was, when we were setting this thing up a little earlier, I noticed a new option down there. It says new, and it said something about live, and it's for recording musicians live. So you might want to
oh,
check that out.
nice.
It had to, I think it has to do, remember, the problem, of course, is latency and this and that, so you can't really play together.
Right.
It's a huge editing mess to try to make that work, but I guess they've done something. If I was a customer, say I'm a new, you're pitching a new trailer house or something. Why JDM? What is there anything that you could tell me that would set your company apart other than your body of work?
Yeah, I think our we as a company brought a really different style to trailers. We've noticed in recent years the trailers became a lot more rhythmic, Foley sounds, which are like, cool sounds that are recorded, and you building them into the track more. So I think that appealed a lot to editors, because obviously they use sounds and Foley, and to have kind of those sounds built in musically, that was something that we were really big on. I'd say, yeah, we just have a different sound and a different approach than other music companies.
How important do you think education was at Berkeley for you to, do what you do?
It's definitely fundamental to everything. I feel like sometimes you don't think about it as much, because I'm not sitting here reading music every day. But I definitely have to use my ear all the time, so I need to know if a chord is not the right voicing, or there's a rub somewhere, and I can hear through the arrangement. I mean, obviously I have a background in composing, so that helps a lot. But even just as a creative director, having a music foundation is huge, because you can immediately just know when something in the arrangement is not working. And I think that's the biggest thing.
I have another friend that's a composer, and he said, the best part of my music education is when I'm composing and I run into a corner. He says, instead, he says, and I, he says, Mike, you might have two ways out. I've got 50.
Yeah, that's true. You have a bit bigger musical vocabulary, and you can analyze other pieces of music to really dig in and see what other composers are doing. That all that stuff is insanely helpful.
So, okay, the music business that you've been in your whole life. We work crazy hours. Like you said, you get that deadline, you've got to work all nighters, you got to do all this stuff, and you've got a wonderful family. How do you balance this work with your family?
I've been lucky enough to have, with my own business now, kind of develop my own schedule for the most part. So I have the kids in the morning, get them ready, get them off to school, and I'm usually able to, get in here and start working pretty early. And I have a lot of composers that are overseas, so usually I have a flood of tracks I need to listen to in first thing in the morning. And I have the daytime, and then evening comes around. Me and my wife both work from home, so we're usually pretty flexible of who can get the kids, who can get dinner going, who can get them to soccer practice, all that kind of stuff. And again, working remotely is just amazing too. Now I'm checking emails if I'm at a my son's soccer practice. I can be on my phone checking emails. If I need to listen to something, I put my headphones on and I can give some feedback. And things are just so much more flexible than they used to be. And I think that's incredible because the work-life balance is pretty necessary. I mean, if I was my younger days where I had to be just glued in a studio that was outside of the home and not available for many hours and always under pressure for a deadline, I think it would be very difficult to maintain that work-life balance. But luckily, things are a lot more flexible and can kind of work from anywhere
Now,
now.
luckily, that's what's that thing? If you work hard enough, you get lucky. So it sounds like that you work pretty hard at it to make it work. What was I going to ask you here? I've got a, how about a quick little rapid fire? All right, here we go. And this is just whatever comes to the top of your head. Nobody will hold it against you. Nobody hold it against Joel. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie? Goodfellas.
Favorite child? No, I'm just kidding.
Might answer that one.
Most important thing that you do when you meet somebody for the first time?
When I meet someone for the first time, geez, I don't know. Just get to try to get past surface level and get to know the person and see what their interests are. And yeah, I don't know. I guess just get past the small talk, I
Goes
suppose.
to goes to that that thing of when we grew up, it's like shake somebody's hand and look them right in the eye. Toughest project you've ever had to work on?
The toughest one that I worked on recently that I can't really say. There's some studios that actually where we can't post all the projects, but there was one that was like just a mountain of revisions and took a lot of work to get over the finish line, but it did go through. So yeah, it was a many weeks long process where a lot of times these are done in a couple
I
days.
had to ask you because, as you know as I do, when a producer comes in and says, I need it to be more red, things start going sideways.
Yeah,
Okay,
definitely.
last rapid fire, something non-music related that you would love to try to
Love
love
to
to try.
try. Surfing. I feel like I've been in LA all this time and I haven't learned how to surf. And I love the water. I love being out at the beach and no excuses why I haven't learned to surf yet. So that's something I want to hear soon.
What do you think AI is going to do to your business?
That's definitely a tough call. I've played around with some AI programs where you can kind of feed it a track and see what it spits out based on, what you've influenced it. And the ones that I've played with so far are absolutely terrible, like just completely off base. So I'm sure obviously the technology is gonna develop more and more. There's one program that we do use a lot, called La La La.ai. It's a like automatic vocal splitter, but it also has features in it that if you sang a vocal, you could make it sound like Chris Martin, or you could make it sound like Rihanna by, selecting it. So, but obviously that kind of stuff is very, it's just very fun right now. It's not that obviously you can't use that in any commercial way. So it's remained to be seen how it's gonna affect things. I think the first thing it'll probably hit will be more of the underscore, easily replicable music. Just have some light strings under a scene, and it's kind of like what do you call it? Like just like library music. I could see that being a place, and I could also see big agencies and clients being motivated to cut costs and do that kind of thing. So I think as a composer, anything you can do to really separate yourself, focus on bespoke music, things that aren't just anyone can do it type of thing, or if it's just like very minimal, those types of things I think are probably going to be the first at risk. So
Interesting.
I think anything that's more, cut to picture, just things like that. I mean, I can't see AI replacing that anytime soon because it's just so specific. And anything that just really separates yourself as an artist, you know, all AI can do is imitate, right? It can't set a trend or create a new sound, so to speak.
Keep that making new trends, Joel.
Thank you.
Last question. If I were to start down the path of creating my own music company, what advice, since you've done it, what advice might you give me to remove some of the pain and maybe give me more clarity?
That's a tough one. I know this advice worked for me, but I don't know. It's hard to give advice that worked for everybody. Sure. But for me, it was just to be really open to where things were going to go. Mm-hmm. Whereas sometimes you start out something and you have this very defined idea. Mm-hmm. I think I was pretty open at first and like just trying to find my sound and find my style and not being having it stuck in my head what mm-hmm. I was, but I was kind of like letting it freely kind of come to me, like stylistically mm-hmm. and musically, and finding where my lane would be. And I think that's important. Just don't get too stuck early on. Mm-hmm. Leave yourself open because you never know. I never thought in a million years I'd be doing trailers. Yeah. Like I started out writing and producing with bands and touring with a band, and I thought I was going to try to produce hit songs, and here I am with doing movie trailers. So something I never imagined. Yeah. So you just have to also just be open to different paths that will present themselves over the
years.
And
you found something that you love doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
That's really cool. Well, I appreciate you spending a little time with me. It's really good to see you.
You too.
I am going to reach back out to you one day when you're in the studio, and we'll just hop on one of these for 5 minutes so you can show people what the heck you do.
You know, sure.
That'd be really cool. Well, much success, brother.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate it.
Great chatting with you. Bye-bye.
Everyone.